Hello, and welcome to our third podcast. This is The Dementia Experience. I'm Clara Hebblethwaite, and today I'm with two brilliant friends who I've met over the last year or so. We have Anne Burden and Tanya Laringen, and we've known each other for the last few months due to the experiences that the three of us have had with our mums. We're going to talk, as we do quite regularly in our coffee mornings, about the things that have happened to us in the last few weeks and months and how our parents or our mother's dementia has affected us. And we're all, as you'll discover, at different sorts of stages of our journey. So let's start. Let's start with you, Anne. Your mum, a brilliant, brilliant woman who I met a few times, was in the same care home as mine. And she more recently developed dementia, didn't she?
That's right.
Do you want to tell us a bit about what?
So mum moved into the care home back in, it's a couple of years ago, I suppose, initially with mobility problems. Mm-hmm. That was the primary need for her to move in the home. She didn't feel safe living on her own anymore. I had my slight concerns that there were dementia changes going on.
Yeah.
We finally got the diagnosis about a year after she'd been in the care home. Mm-hmm. And she sadly passed away in July this year, unrelated to dementia in many ways, because mm-hmm. it was pneumonia that finally she succumbed to. But yeah, I met you way back at the start of this when I was feeling quite lost, having just got mum's diagnosis and not knowing how to deal with it, how to cope, where to turn to. So that's when you came into my life.
Oh, and you've been such a big part of my life as well. You've got the most incredibly warm kind of vibe about you. And I always loved, particularly when I'd see you and your mum outside, she'd be in her wheelchair and you'd be pushing her around the kind of car park area, getting fresh air and getting her to check out the plants and chatting away. And I just immediately warmed to you because you had this kind of glow about you. So it's incredibly raw for you.
It is still raw. It is still raw. And I think the hardest thing, and it's quite difficult to know how to say it, but for me, my sister and I, we have so much to be grateful for that we never had the full dementia journey with mum.
Yeah.
It never completely stole her from us, which we were both dreading, to be honest. She recognised us. We could still have very, very good conversation, lots of laughs. It had changed her, without a doubt. Bits of her were missing, for sure. But that fundamental recognition, love, never went, for which we can be incredibly grateful. But I think there's so many taboos about death and dying and how you're expected to grieve and what you're supposed to say that you have to... I think you have to have lived it, experienced it, to realise that actually, no, it was almost the kindest thing, that something else got her.
Yeah.
It's a strange feeling because deep down I know I probably shouldn't be feeling like that, but that's my honest feeling on it.
Yeah. And you're incredibly authentic in that. There aren't any rules or regulations on how to grieve or how to feel.
No.
But that was something your instinct was, crikey, thank goodness, in a way.
I mean, the frustration when she became wheelchair-bound.
Yeah.
The frustration of her losing her independence and not being able to go outside, to not be able to come down to the New Forest, which she loved, with us because we couldn't get her in a car anymore. That was hard enough for her to deal with. But moving forward, for her to be able to deal with losing her capacity, I think, would have been horrific.
Yeah.
Well, there's an awful lot to be grateful. That's not to say that I don't miss her every single day.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at the minute.
Yeah. And you were an incredible part of Woodchurch House in the sense that you got to know the carers really well.
Yeah.
And you had those brilliant friendships, relationships. And you said almost soon after your mum had sadly died, you were popping in.
I wanted to go
regardless.
Back in. Because I'd formed connections, not just with the staff, but with the residents and popping in and seeing your mum.
Yeah.
So, there's still a very big connection. I can't go round the corner to the where her room was. I can't go down that far in the home yet, but to be in the lounge and to go and see her friends is fine.
Yeah. I'm just going to introduce Tanya so that we can kind of talk as a three as well. Tanya's become a really good friend of ours alongside. Tanya's mum was also in the same care home as your mum and as mine, and has since changed her scenario. Do you want to tell us, Tanya, what has happened with your mum recently?
Recently, unfortunately, mum had two accidents in the care home.
Yeah.
One resulted in a fracture, as they call underspace fracture.
Yeah.
So didn't need any surgery, but she went to hospital and they sort of obviously checked her all out, came home the next day, well, back to the care home. And then a week later, she had what they call an unwitness fall in the care home in her bedroom.
Yeah.
And that was the start of a pretty horrendous journey, realistically.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't, we'll say in brackets, noticed for about 4 days. Hmm. Even though I had been mentioning there were problems, she finally got to hospital 4 days later. Mm-hmm. And she required blood transfusion before she had the surgery.
Yeah.
But prelude to all of that, in fact, I think that's the correct word, isn't it? Prelude?
Yeah.
Prelude?
Yeah.
I had not wanted her to stay in the care home. Mm. Only because we're from farm.
Yes.
And we're lucky we have a farm. And there's myself, my mother, and my uncle who lives in my house there. But obviously, when you're from that sort of background, you're used to the freedom.
Yeah.
And the animals are there all the time, the dogs, the horses, goats, whatever, sheep. And for her to be put in the care home, not necessarily my wanting to go there, but that's where she was. She did 5 weeks in the hospital first. Mm-hmm. So sort of backtracking in steps here, is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
So the lead up to her actually going into hospital started in February. Mm-hmm. We had been managing all the time up to then, except for the last few months when it became obvious things were, you know, progressing in some way. And it was quite difficult to manage. I was awake all night because she'd be up all night pacing. I'm sure you girls, I don't know whether you've had that with your mother.
Yes, mum paces a
lot. Your mum paces, Clara. Yeah. So, and
amazing, there's any carpet night left.
Moonlighting and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, come 5 o'clock, it was all go.
Yeah.
So I'd be trying to be awake all day and then be awake all night. And it became pretty difficult.
Yeah.
But you see, what you can't do with anyone who you think has a dementia issue or memory issue, you can't really just say, I think you need to get your memory checked, mum, because you knew there'd be mega explosions. Yeah. And you actually have to just work a way around it.
Yeah.
And in my case, what I did, I finally got to the doctor. Well, actually, again, a few years earlier before my father had died, I knew things were happening then and I spoke to the doctor. And when we were in there, mum was having a checkup. And without thinking, the doctor said, oh, Marion, let's check your memory. And you can imagine my mother, you know, 5 foot... Move. Blow up.
She's a rocket. A pocket rocket.
Yeah. And she said, what do you mean? Nothing's wrong with my memory. I said, no, mum, just, you know, because you've mixed up with words here. I said, nothing wrong with me. What do you want me to answer? First thing they tended to do is draw the clock face. I don't know if you girls have seen that one. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
Draw the clock face. She could draw the clock face. That was fine. Then it got to the point of, okay, Marion, now put the numbers in. So she just about managed to put the numbers in. Next question was, draw the lines out as it's the arms for 11:15. Couldn't do it. So that seems to be quite an early indicator that I think they use as a general thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And her feelings when she couldn't put the hands on that clock
Nothing wrong
face,
with me.
Yeah, so just total, denial. Yeah.
Total denial,
Because I had the opposite. Mum got really cross afterwards. Mum had been rehearsing for her test.
Yeah.
Because she always felt it was an exam. So she'd been rehearsing, and I found it recently, notes where she'd been writing down the date and what the Prime Minister was, what the name of the Queen was at the time.
Yes.
And she'd obviously been rehearsing, and then after her test, the tears and the upset and the anger.
Because she couldn't do it.
Because she'd got it wrong. And in her words, I failed.
No, and she'd come from an education.
And she'd come from an education, she was a teacher.
So she'd made almost, revision cards.
Yeah.
And she was really frustrated.
Creating those little memory blocks, wasn't it? Making it all safe and secure there.
How frustrating. Yeah.
So my mother, didn't want to know. So I thought, okay, well, that didn't work. And we carried on another few years. Because my father actually vascular dementia as well,
okay,
plus chronic heart failure.
Yep.
And we were looking after him at home. So, but what they said with Mum later on in time, when we did the next checkup with her, mm, I actually only got her in December of last year because her legs were swelling up.
Mm.
And that was the only way I literally could get her in for any talk to the doctor. But it was not about her head.
No.
It was about the circulation.
Yeah.
Get to the doctors, and I'd warned them this time. I sent an email. I said, please, for goodness sake, don't mention dementia or memory.
Keep it physical.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I brought up then was, I said, look, Mum's just mixing up the odd word. Do you think it could be maybe to blood clot or a little bleed or something? And that was the way in to get her to go and actually have the test. Well, the CT scan, because she's got a pacemaker, couldn't have an MRI. And Mum was quite happy with that. She thought, oh, yes, okay. And we got her in, and sure enough, it showed small vessel disease, which didn't mean anything to her, but obviously I knew then what we were talking about. And from then on, we got into the memory clinic.
Mm-hmm.
But that was actually done at home, which was so much easier, because we had to take my father previously up to the place, Eureka Park, where they do the memory clinic stuff.
Yeah.
And my dad, fabulous man with animals, amazing man, but he couldn't read or write properly. He wasn't really interested in who the heck was running the country.
No.
It's the animals.
Yes.
You know, we're from circus background, then to the horses and all that stuff. And when they start saying to Dad, who's the Prime Minister, or who was this and who was that, and Mum knew he wouldn't be able to answer it, didn't mean he was having a problem.
No.
He didn't know the answer.
Yeah, he would never have known.
No.
At whatever age.
And he never drew.
Stage.
And if they said to him, can you remember that paperwork there, Peter, and he'd read it, and he read as much as he could, because Mum had actually taught him quite a bit, and he had learnt to write enough that he could write little notes and things.
Yeah.
But to him, Mum said, this is a total waste of time for him. It cannot measure his brain.
So those early tests, those kind of tests for diagnosis, need to be revisited.
Yes.
And rewritten. They're ridiculous.
Totally.
Yeah.
They have to be able to discuss a patient's background.
Yeah. The context.
Yes. As to, is that actually a viable thing to put in front of them and say, okay, go through all these tick, 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 tick.
Yeah. And we know, having cared for our mums, how demoralising those sorts of situations can be, how humiliating, how frustrating, all of them just adding to their stresses and strains. You know, we know that the only way for things to work with our parents is to have, you know, a sort of a positive, affirming style of conversation with them, rather than one that's testing them in any way or saying no to them in some way.
But you think that'd be depending on what stage they're at?
I think almost all stages. Mm. Yeah, even in those early stages, your mum was in bits when she couldn't pass the
test. Totally. Absolutely totally. And I, thinking about it, probably the very first time that I thought, hang on a minute, this is something more than... Mum had a lot of recurrent UTIs, and we know with UTIs, confusion comes.
Yeah.
So an awful lot of stuff could have been, not swept under the carpet, but explained by, oh, perhaps she's got a UTI again. But actually, I think the very first time I thought, no, this is more, was when she phoned me up one night. Mum had always been a fabulous cook, a real homemaker as well as being a full-time teacher. Always cooked everything from scratch. And she phoned me up one night to ask me how to cook a potato. And I thought, no, this isn't a UTI. This is something deeper. But then Mum was very good at being a swan. So on the surface, she'd be gliding along and underneath pedalling like fury.
Yeah.
So every single time she ever had a medical appointment, even if it wasn't a test, as she saw it, she felt she was being examined. She felt she was being checked out, pass or fail. So, she used to rehearse like crazy for any of them.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm trying to think, but I think first time she was ever had the screening or whatever they call it, the memory check, was actually in hospital. And I don't think... I think she'd managed to not fool them, but to answer enough questions correctly.
Yeah. To be able to get through it.
And I think it was probably me just banging on about, no, I know my mum. Something
is going on here.
Yeah,
that's it. We all know our mums.
That's it.
We are,
or our fathers, for that matter. Yeah. Exactly. Whoever, we know them better than anybody.
So I mean, my job was in a nursery school with little people, and we always used to say to the parents, "You are the expert on your child."
Yeah,
and that's how I felt when Mum got to a point where I almost felt I had to take the lead on her medical stuff. I became the expert on her.
Yeah.
And I knew there were bits missing because it wasn't normal. I hate that word, but it wasn't normal for Mum. It wasn't usual Mum.
Yeah.
So I had to ring me up and say, "How do I cook a potato?"
Yeah.
It was just, no, this was a huge red flag.
So the context, as we've said, the family viewpoints and your instincts are way more accurate than any of those tests would be.
Mm.
And yeah, perhaps we're not as involved as we should be in terms of making the diagnosis that you pick up on way faster than any of those frustrating tests. And as you say, women especially are so brilliant at masking, at, like you say, being a swan.
And that's exactly what my mum was masking.
Yes.
Because, as it turns out, she has had this for a long time. So go back to when I did that first, you know, let's do a little check, and they had noticed that she couldn't do the clock face thing, etc.
Yes.
For mum then, she was officially diagnosed end of December.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least I got her in the system. And that's my thing to anybody. You know, if you feel there's any question marks about you or someone you care for, do something about it however you can. Because actually, I have been checked.
Mm-hmm.
Once my dad was diagnosed, I have had memory problems for a very long time. And they put it down to some diseasey things I'd had as a youngster, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, hang on. I think I'd like to know whether this is happening or not.
Yeah.
And consequently, I did go for the check. They scanned me and did all those things. And I did the written tests. And again, I am useless at remembering. I can draw and I can tell stories. I can't really remember questions. I hated tests of any description at school. Forget it. I left school at 14. Yeah. I didn't start proper school till I was 9 because of being on the show. Yeah. We had our own schooling, either on the show or you'd do the odd days here and there.
Yeah.
As it turns out, I actually have, what's that called, ADHD?
ADHD.
D.
Yeah.
See, I can forget the D on the end. Yeah, so I have that.
Yeah.
And people are saying, well, do you really want to know if you've got anything wrong? I said, absolutely.
Mm.
You cannot put your head in the sand with this.
Yeah.
Nobody must do.
Yeah.
And what's even worse, sadly, is we're seeing younger and younger people getting it.
Yeah.
Or being diagnosed with the start of it in some way.
Yeah.
And
so far, the stuff that's pumped out through the media is very much, oh, dementia's the end of the world. This is the most miserable outcome you can ever have. Mm. So far, that seems to be the narrative around dementia.
Mm.
And it feels like that will definitely put people off from going to get a diagnosis. But it also feels like, oh, right, dementia is out of our hands, that we can't really do much about it, that we just have this one-way ticket and there's nothing we can kind of change about it. But we have discovered, even in small ways, how much we can alter, you know, whether it's being back with the animals at the farm, having your mum at home now with those.
That's another story.
How has that changed her life?
Has it changed mine?
But well, is she comforted? Is she
now that you see
calmer?
Again, because realistically, as we all know, dementia goes in so many different stages for everybody. Yes. Nobody is the same. So I have mum, I had my father, I had my auntie as well, who had Alzheimer's right to the very end at home with us. So for mum, like I said, having her in the care home, I always wanted to take her out because she had 5 weeks in the hospital. They said she had to go to a care home for an assessment bed. You don't have an option on that. Even with power of attorney, that is generally what happens. So she went in for that, and 5 weeks at the hospital, well, the first few weeks was an absolute murder. You know, they were ringing me up, we can't get tablets in. I'd have to talk to her on the phone. She'd be trying to smash the windows. They actually had her in a stable, I was going to say.
She would have preferred.
Oh, my God, she would have preferred a stable. Yeah. She had a room on her own. But she hated it, and she was one-on-one, so there had to be always someone there.
Yeah.
And then I'd ring up and say, how is she today? And they said, oh, you know, pretty bad. Yeah. All right, fine. And then when the first time I went to visit her there, when she, I wasn't allowed to see her for a few days, they had to try and let her settle. They then said, well, okay, you can come and see her now. And she said, her first words were, why am I here in hospital? Mm. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
So I turned it around and said, well, there's a bit of a malfunction. I said, you know, you've got this problem with your heart. It's vascular, isn't
yes.
it? Yes. And she could understand
she
that.
She preferred that, yeah.
So, yes. I said, well, that is delayed in sending the blood up to your head regularly.
Yeah.
There's a little hiccup in that supply chain up there. Mm-hmm. And consequently, you won't always remember things.
Yeah. And that was easier for her to
understand malfunction. Yeah. She could mm-hmm. get her head around
yeah.
that. Again, staying accept. From the D word.
Yeah, because that's the thing. We're also terrified of the word dementia and what it means, mm. what the kind of significance of it. So people, it feels, certainly the Western world, can accept physical disability way better than we can mental disability.
It's that invisible illness, isn't it?
Totally. Yes.
It's
yes.
the invisibility of it.
Yeah.
I mean, my mum used to say, my gran used to say it, her mum used to say it, if I lose my marbles, bang me over the head.
Yes.
And that was an unwritten rule. No, it wasn't. But it was frequently said yeah. in our house.
Yeah.
And then there I was faced with my mum, who wasn't losing her marbles. The brain just wasn't functioning like any other bit of her body
yes.
that was beginning to mm. slow down and not be as kind to her as it could have been.
Yes.
It wasn't her fault, out of her control.
Yeah.
But the problem with mum was she had her assessment, then we had the letter, then we had the chap come out and basically just read the letter to her. And then I was left with her trying to explain it to her in ways that, A, she could retain.
Yes.
And B, that wasn't going to scare her.
Yep.
Because I knew in the back of her mind was that, if I lose my marbles, you will bang me over the head, won't you?
Yeah.
And that's tough. And that's thankfully when I found you yeah. and Tanya.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, how do I deal with this? Because yeah. I don't know how to communicate with her in a way that will satisfy that need for an answer for her. Mum would always deal with anything as long as she knew exactly what she was dealing with.
Yeah.
So when her body started to pack up, when the legs started to pack up, we could say it's the changes in your spine that's pressing on those nerves, yada mm. yada. But it was so much harder with the brain.
Yeah.
So much harder.
Absolutely. And my mum, she knows there is something going on.
Yeah.
And after finally getting her out of the care home, after the final accident when she ended up, you know, like I said, operating and all mm-hmm. that, I said to them, I want her home.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. She cannot go back there mm-hmm. for the simple reason, her words were, if I wasn't crazy when I went there, I would be crazy by the time I get out.
Yeah.
It is driving me crazy. Mm. And that also proves the point that not everybody is suited to a care home situation. Mm-hmm. She was complex. So obviously the place she was at, I think, take the extreme cases, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And your mother was on the mm-hmm. lower floor,
yeah.
wasn't she? So that's a whole different, you know,
yeah.
much, quite honestly, nice. Nice
oh,
place
yeah, absolutely.
For her. But I actually agree with you. And I'm sure Clara would do the same, that on the score of you have to be, it doesn't sound right, but relieved that your mama had a nice passing.
Absolutely.
Before she went
yeah.
to the end. Because
yeah.
if that happened to my mum, well, I had it with Dad.
Yeah.
He didn't go to the extreme ends. He literally went to sleep with Mum and I by him at home.
Yeah.
Mm.
He
yeah.
never went into a care home, thank God.
Mm.
And he never needed to, you know, yeah. because we were there to look after him. And we had carers with us. But I always said that once we knew he was on that journey and as it was progressing, if he doesn't wake up tomorrow, I will say thank you, God.
Yes.
Because my auntie went to the absolute extreme that you can possibly go.
Mm.
And with Mum now, and Mum even said to me then, I don't want to go down there.
Mm.
And that was before we were on the journey with her.
Mm. Yeah.
And as an animal lover.
Yeah.
And you as an animal lover.
Yeah.
See that journey.
But you see, it's right, you're saying, unless you've been in the situation
mm.
where you have seen or been
yeah.
on the journey, you will have no idea what's
yeah.
going on. And even what they show on television still doesn't cover the actual
reality,
absolutely.
Yeah.
The reality of what happens.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because maybe it's too gruesome for some to see.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't discuss. I saw a program the other day. We were talking about it.
Yeah.
Did it cover all the points? I don't think it did.
No.
Quite frankly.
Because this is the documentary on Channel 4, the Anna Richardson documentary. It was interesting,
but it wasn't
revolutionary.
No, and that's the problem, isn't it? Even when you see these dementia adverts, they're all smiley, they're all happy, they're lovey-dovey.
Yeah.
It's not for a lot of us, that journey. It is for some.
Yeah.
You see, like my dad it was, and your mum was a lovely lady. And I remember meeting
mum,
her.
A bit like your mum, was a proper outdoor person.
Yes.
For her being in a care home felt like a prison.
Yeah. I'm sure it did.
Even though it was, bless her heart, it was her choice, which I'm forever grateful for, that I never had to make that decision for
and
her.
And that's a very strong person to have actually done that, wasn't it?
Massively.
But she had her mental capacity to do it, and that's even better.
Yeah,
that
thank
was
goodness.
Her choice.
Thank goodness. Yes. And it was one fool too many at home. And she suddenly realised how vulnerable and how unsafe she was. Mm. But yeah, it felt like a prison. And when her legs went, it felt even more like a prison because she had to ask people to do stuff for her.
Yes.
And that drove her to distraction.
Mm. And excuse my slurping tea.
I think as much as it's the reality of it for the person that is suffering with dementia, there's the reality of what it's like for those of us that love the person.
Mm. Mm.
And I don't think that's talked about enough. I mean, there were times, hand on heart, where I would put the phone down from my mum at 2 o'clock in the morning and be, hate is a very strong word, but I felt that intense emotion because she had just pressed one too many of my buttons.
Yeah.
But that's the reality of it.
At 2 o'clock in the morning, why do I suddenly need to be... What? She was ringing up about random things like the rules of a game because she would have these very vivid dreams that would become a reality.
Mm.
Totally irrelevant that it was 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, whatever in the morning.
Yeah.
It was her reality and it was vital that I attended to it there and then.
Yeah.
And when you're disturbed night after night, well, you know, Tanya, you get to that point where you just want to scream and then the guilt that goes with that feeling.
So there's kind of anger, resentment, guilt.
Yeah.
And those aren't discussed because everyone's in their sort of private torment, aren't they? They're caring either at home for their loved one or via a care home.
Yeah.
And either scenario has its pros and cons. But generally speaking, those family members are just carrying the burden alone, and they're not able to say to another family member, flipping heck, my mum is driving me nuts today, or whatever the scenario is. And it is huge, that responsibility, isn't it? It can really take its toll. And I think you're right, family members don't get enough of a chance to chat to each other because they're so locked in.
And that's if you have the family members, of course.
Right.
It's me.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one solo. Yeah, you're carrying all of that burden, you know, and I don't think our mums want to be a burden. You know, they wouldn't have wanted us to have sacrificed our lives or to have gone down the plug hole with them.
Yeah.
So it's finding the balance, isn't it, of making sure they're in the right place, whether it's at home on the farm or in a care home or wherever, that makes them as comfortable as possible, but also accepting that the reality is pretty ugly, that it isn't, as you said, the smiling, you know, elderly lady in the care home.
So there will be some.
There will be,
you know.
But it's not necessarily typical. And certainly when they're at the stage of going into a care home, they won't
be. There can be murder.
Yeah. There will be, a lot of noise and a lot of accidents and a lot of people, you know, not necessarily wearing the correct clothes at the correct time. and that is the reality.
Yes.
And, you know, us as the loved ones, we've seen the good, the bad and the ugly.
Very ugly. Yeah.
And that's hardcore.
Yeah. Mm. But even seeing the ugly for both of you, as awful as it sounds, I learned so much from watching, from learning, from listening, because you've got nowhere to turn to other than people that are walking a similar, it's not the same, similar path to you.
A semi-parallel, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. We know we're all on a one-way ticket.
Yeah,
there is no
absolutely.
Way back from where we're going.
No.
But
we do have control of that journey. I think a lot of the time that I see anyone discussing dementia in the media, it's kind of arms crossed, like this is the end of the world and it's a complete tragedy and we're now waiting for the government to do something about it.
Yeah,
when actually in our own little worlds, we can make a huge difference to how the journey goes and tweak things and make those relationships inside the care homes with the other nurses and other family relatives. And, you know, all of those things make things bearable and possible and livable. I think otherwise we just kind of diminish our own responsibility and wait for the government to somehow swoop in on a white horse, when that's never going to happen.
No, but I think also, though, just getting back to the care homes, is that also one has to be pretty forward in saying your thoughts if one thinks something's wrong. You know, I know a lot of people, again, from what I've read or other people, you see they place their family member into the care home and they sort of backtracked.
Yeah.
And that's it. They said, oh, well, that's it. Thank goodness.
Yeah, job done.
They're taken care of, job done.
Yeah.
It's not.
No.
But it's still your responsibility to keep an eye, because a lot of these people, it doesn't matter which care home, wherever, you know, you
they're
still
vulnerable.
Need the outside. You still have to be heavily involved because they will miss things.
Yeah.
They've got so many they are looking after.
But it's just like in schools. Anne worked in a school as I did. Mm. And we know the best schools are the ones that have the parents involved.
Absolutely.
You know, if the parents just wave and go and watch Jeremy Kyle all day, then we know it's going to be a disaster.
That's an interesting one.
You know, whereas the parents that would help out at the fairs or come in and chat to the teachers or give them a heads up about so-and-so not sleeping last night, therefore it might be tricky in class today. Like, those were the schools and the classrooms that work well. And it's so important that we kind of have that involvement, you know, that the local community does tap into the care home. It's not just laters potatoes, in you go, it's going to cost us 100K and we'll, you know, we'll see you on the other side. No, we've got to keep going in and bringing life to them.
Mm. And that's quite interesting. I mean, like we were saying before, I did get mum out.
Yes.
So, which was always the long-term plan. And the managers of the care home also said it was in her best interest.
Mm. Yes.
The care home was not the place for her.
No. Yeah.
Because also being in that situation, they can't just open the door and walk out.
Yeah.
They can't open the window and take in the big fresh air because they'd have been out the window if it could have opened wide enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
But having got her back now, unfortunately, because she's got the hip plated and done together.
Yeah.
That has now affected her mobility, which she didn't previously have.
Yeah.
So that's actually thrown a whole nother spanner in the works for me.
Yes.
But I am really, really lucky that we are on CHC, continual home care.
Continuous health care.
That's it, health care. Yeah.
So your care is paid for by the NHS.
And it was in the care home.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I managed to get it transferred out.
Good. So you have 24-hour care?
24-hour care. Yeah. Total. Lovely, lovely ladies.
Good.
And but I still have to be, I obviously am around.
Yes.
And there are still some very tricky moments. She flips like a switch.
Yeah.
And, you know, they will ring me up. I could suddenly get a phone call now saying, Tanya, can you talk to your mum?
Yeah.
I have to
have
the video.
So you are highly involved.
I am still very involved just because they're there all the time. You know, she's progressing and she's taking big jumps.
Yeah.
And she will literally, I've taken some voice recordings at times because I think actually that's also quite interesting. If ever one was doing this again, I could even just play the voice recording and of what she's saying. And she has moments of lucidity.
Mm.
They're getting less because like the other day she just said, my head's empty.
Yeah. Aww.
There's nothing there.
Mm, but even saying that is spot on, isn't
it?
And
there
I think yeah, she's hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
She's the essence is still there. You know, that's why music works, because it bypasses the brain. So the soul, the essence, you know, the real nook of the person is there. It's just like you described Anne so well, you know, whether it was the heart or the lung or, you know, the legs that aren't working physically, the head is just working less and less. Mm. And, you know, I think we're so scared of the head not working. Like you were saying, knock me over, you know, run me over if I lose my marbles. Everyone's so worried about being, you know, like in the olden days, put in the attic and sort of locked away
from society. Asylum, isn't it? Asylum. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So we're terrified of that. When, you know, if they are kind of regressing to a childhood, which they seem to, you know, wearing very few clothes, imagining that they're running through the fields, you know, like a little child would in those classrooms that we've taught in. You know, they are returning to the beginning. And all of the emphasis in society seems to be about, you know, having your baby and all of that, those early years and the focus on bringing up the children. What about sort of bringing down the old person.
The other end.
Yeah.
It is. I call
returning
it the
circle
them. Of life.
It is. Totally. Why aren't we as clever about returning them to the ground as we are bringing them out of the womb?
But like, that's because possibly, I don't know if it's just English or, you know, sorry about that.
Talk of. Yes.
No.
But I think the Western world has got a problem with the end of life. They haven't got it.
No, they don't
they
discuss it.
They haven't accepted it, celebrated it. You know, why are the Mexicans having a wonderful Day of the Dead where it's like, let's party and celebrate those lights that have gone out? You know, the comparison, we just don't have that in the West. Mm. We don't get death.
Certainly at my dad's funeral, we all wore bright colours.
Oh,
he hated funerals. He hated black. So I thought, well... Yeah. Okay, Dad, you know, everyone wore bright colours and we had the daffodils and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
What support
has there been, Anne, on the other side? You know, there's we know there's very little during your kind of experience while Mum was with us.
I haven't actually turned to anybody other than you lot.
Right.
Because I get, I think...
You get the truth from us.
Yeah, I get the truth from you and I think you both understand because you are... You know what the end is going to look like, potentially, for your loved ones.
Mm.
So you get it when I say I'm so grateful.
Mm.
And I don't feel I have to hide that. Whereas amongst, not necessarily my close friends, but you pick and choose who you say that to.
Who you disclose things to, isn't it?
Yeah.
And,
Do you think you have to kind of understand life in order to understand death? Do you think... We're sort of forced to understand life because we've been so closely associated to dementia.
I think so. I think I'd never experienced sitting with somebody who passed away. My sister and I were so, so privileged that we were there with her when she passed away. But I haven't got a clue what to expect because nobody had ever talked to me about it.
No.
And again,
nobody had ever talked to me. Yeah. So I didn't know what was going to happen. And that was quite scary. And I automatically went into big sister mode.
Yeah.
And I was there. I couldn't do anything for Mum anymore. No. That was game over. But then my next role became I've got to keep my sister and my niece safe and secure, and that becomes my focus.
Yeah.
So I still don't think I've actually dealt with me.
Yeah. But it takes a long time. Yeah. And in reality, it's not something that you can ever put into weeks, days, boxes, months.
No.
It's a process.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily, well, you don't get over it. I mean, I'm Dad's 3 years ago now. Mm. But I still chat to him.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And I know with my father passed away 20 years ago. And that really was happy release because he was suffering horrendously with... He'd got septicemia and all sorts.
Mm.
And it was a really horrible, painful time for him. So when my mum, none of us sadly were with him when he passed away, but Mum came to tell me, and my initial words to her were, thank God.
Mm.
And then there's that instant...
Then you think, oh, my God, I shouldn't have said that.
I shouldn't have said that.
But there are no rules.
There are no rules.
No.
But then 2 or 3 years down the line, suddenly I was crying. My dad was an avid cricketer and the England team had done really well.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Dad.
And you knew he'd love it.
I couldn't talk to him. Yes. And it was that. And I know that will come along at some point with Mum.
Yeah. And it'll catch you off guard.
Nobody can tell me when it will be.
Yeah.
But no, it's... Yeah, is this just that feeling of relief?
Yes, yes.
Real relief.
Yeah,
yeah. So.
For her sake, for your
sake. For her
sake,
yes. Definitely for her sake. And I think having always had animals all my life, much like you,
yes,
I would never want to see my animals suffer.
Yeah, exactly.
And animals do teach you about the cycle, don't they? That they do teach you how life and death work.
Yeah.
And we do put our dogs down when they're in terrible pain.
Well, my father, bless him, at his worst, when he was in so much pain and there was nothing we could do, I'll never forget, he said to me, if I was one of the dogs, you'd put me down.
Exactly.
And yes, Dad, I would, but I'm not allowed to.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to.
No, and I did say to Mum the same, because she actually said to me, I don't want to wake up.
No.
I don't want to wake up. I said, please don't ask me to do that because I can't.
Yeah.
But I would actually do that to myself.
Yeah. See, even with Mum in the hospital, when the last time she was there with her pneumonia, which came on incredibly quickly, and she said to both me and my sister between sort of horrible bits, I can't do this anymore. So I knew we'd made the right decision when we'd said, no, we're not going to pursue this one. This is enough now.
Yeah.
But for her to say that is a huge comfort.
Yes.
Huge comfort.
Again, yes. Taking the responsibility away from you, wasn't it?
Yeah. She was a mum.
Just like my mum would.
Yeah. She was a mum through and through.
Incredible.
Yeah. Through and through. Yeah. Actually, somebody the other day was talking about their mum, because they'd recently lost their mum, and they said it's like the anchor of our family has gone.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is where I'm at the minute. A little bit lost.
Yes.
Because having lost both my parents, now it's just me and my sister, and that's it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I feel like I've lost the anchor, for sure.
So, just to take that idea on, you're sort of bobbing about at sea, perhaps, now, but then life rafts occasionally come out of nowhere sometimes.
Yeah.
Are people coming out of the woodwork, family?
I'm incredibly lucky. Yeah. Incredibly lucky. Yeah. And my sister and I, we talk a lot, and we talk about the good days and the bad days and the silly things that trip us up. And I've got a good friend who's recently lost their dad.
Yeah.
And she'll message me and like, you'll never guess what today's upset was. And it'd be stupid things like emptying tea bags into a teapot.
Yeah.
Because it was dad's favourite wine.
Yeah.
And it's the weirdest things that trip you up.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is to talk about them, however stupid you feel.
And that's why I say,
you're crying over a smell.
Yeah.
But it's good to talk.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? Like you say, it is better out than in on every level, however random or weird. But it's all wonderful because it's out. Yeah. If it just stays in, the lid goes on and then, the feelings explode eventually.
Yes.
Yeah, and we always end up laughing our heads off at the coffee mornings.
Well, but that's
we need that humour. Yeah,
definitely. And I think I realised quite early on it's okay to laugh about the really horrible stuff that's going on.
Totally.
But that's only through talking to other people that have gone through it.
Yeah.
Or are going through it.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of my now she's -5 foot, -4 foot 11. I mean, I call her a shrimp now because when she stands up, she's lost so much weight as well. And she's not independent properly. She still hobbles. You know, she uses a Zimmer frame. She threatens us with a Zimmer frame.
Yeah.
And she says to her, she picks up, she says, get out of my house, get out of my house. And you've got to laugh when you see that. And then they suddenly phone me up and say, Tanya, can you talk to your mum? get the video phone. Then what she do with the video phone? Puts a damn thing to her ear.
Yeah.
I said, Mum, I can't hear you. I can't see you.
Yeah.
Put the phone in front of your face. And she's talking away. I said, I'm looking at your ear. For God's sake, Mum, put the phone in front of your face. And when the carer tries to move it, she says, get away from me. Don't you dare touch me.
Yeah.
She's like, feisty. Feisty, absolutely.
We love your mum.
Don't you think there's a part of them that never, ever goes? It just looks slightly different.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Yeah. I think even at the very end, I think there's a light some way, somehow, in amongst...
Yes.
The confusion and very physically different. I think that remains. I really do. Mm. Until it's extinguished.
Yeah.
I think, and it's finding that essence. Like certainly my mum, you know, she's always been a hostess for the
moment. Oh, yes. I remember meeting your mum.
She just came out loves, with her. As she's like, ambassador's drinks party. And literally, she just loves to
have the meet and greet.
Yeah. I mean, she met and greeted, I don't know what the past of greet is, but she greeted you.
She met
and greeted you with a black eye. So she was like, welcome to the care home.
Oh, my Lord.
But she was given a clipboard. But when she's in character, it's all about, thank heavens, my husband's like, why can't you just tell the truth? Why do you always have to exaggerate? It's like, because...
It is the truth.
It's just boring unless you do turn it into theatre.
Yeah.
So life has to become a stage.
But
it is drama.
Yeah.
It is.
But it's still the
them.
Truth. What you're saying is still the truth. We're just getting the extra gestation.
Yeah.
I can't even pronounce that word.
Fine.
And embellishing and all that stuff. But it is still the truth.
Yeah.
But
it's you're giving a slant that people can actually relate to.
Yeah.
You're totally. Saying, like, the ambassador's wife, the drinks party,
yes.
there she is standing with her thing. You can visualise that.
Yeah. Yeah. But we have to set the stage for them to act the parts,
yes.
whether they're with their dementia or not. Mm. So the stage set for your mum is a stable. It is the lovely straw and animals and stuff that she...
See, for my mum, it was being back at school. Mum went back to her teaching days. So
she did.
I think it was how she was making sense of the environment she was in. So when they'd all sit at lunchtime on basically one long table, because that was the way they did it. To her, that was taking her right back to her teaching days when the children all used to sit at long tables.
Yes.
And actually, it was lovely because she went back to so many of her memories of that time. She couldn't remember what she'd had for lunch, but she could tell you stuff that I'd never heard before. I don't know if it was true. It was her truth.
It does matter. Yeah.
And it was a connection I could make with her.
Amazing.
And that was important, was, yeah, they were new connections. And the other thing that was really important for Mum was if she got to a place where she was in turmoil, if it was just a tangle of string in her head, if I could get her outside, if only for 5 minutes, it was like hitting the reset button for her. A bit like your mum. It was that connection with outside, with fresh air. She would sit and watch clouds. She always loved clouds. So for her to sit under a tree in the care home garden and just sit and look at the clouds would just reset her.
So important.
But it took ages to work that out, because nobody can tell you what's going to unlock your mum, what's going to reset your mum.
So you've got to be imaginative, happy to experiment, open to all sorts, whether it's ridiculous or not, and just keep trying different stuff.
And much like dealing with a child, what worked yesterday isn't necessarily going to work tomorrow.
Same as the animals.
Totally.
Same as an animal.
So animals,
on the learning process, and while they're on this journey, it is still a learning process for everybody, because it keeps changing, doesn't it?
Totally. Yeah. We've got to be so flexible and, able to mix it up.
Yeah, so with my mother at the moment, she is going backwards and forwards. So there's times she sort of goes out and the animals aren't really doing it for her. She'll see them briefly and she'll be back in. You know, so that's why I know she is now rapidly taking those, with her vascular, it steps down. And she's on the rapid journey. Because what I hadn't mentioned earlier was that before she went into hospital, in 6 days, I had the ambulance out 3 times because she became so out of it, hallucinating like mad, threatening me, telling me to stay away from the dogs. They were her daughters. Don't you dare touch my daughter's dogs. She rang up the police, telling them she was being held hostage. And each time the ambulance came out, the first 2 times, I said, I don't know about calling you out again. And they said, do it. If you need us, do it. And then on the third and final time, she rang the police and said she's being held hostage. And they said to her, okay, can you pass us over to the lady? And she's yelling, yes, but she's not my daughter. She may tell you, but she's taken her identity. Now, how whizzy is that?
Yeah.
Able to tell the police person, I've taken the daughter's identity.
Clever.
And then what the policeman said to me, well, is that your mother? I said, yes. Is she have memory problems? Yes. Are you having, you know, can you cope? I said, absolutely not.
S-O-S.
Absolutely, because I'd already been outside hiding behind a wall because she had the stick. She was looking for me.
Yeah.
And I had the one dog. We have one very nervous rescue dog who's fine with me. And Mum was taking all the dogs and putting them in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And I thought, you cannot take this one. So I ran out of that one while she was doing something. And that was it. But then I got the dog back, and after her trying to climb out of the gate onto the road, I then called the police again to say, we do definitely need help. And then she went off up the field, climbing over the fences.
Wow.
And that's when she was then taken away.
Yeah. No one could ever say your mum does not have spirit.
Oh, absolutely. Even now.
Lively. Even now. Yeah. So that, again, goes back to the essence. You know, the essence is there. Yeah. It's gone bananas, haywire, etc. Yeah. But the essence of her being wild and free, which she clearly is in her heart, will remain.
Yes.
Ladies, it's been so, so interesting. We've definitely got a part two in the pipeline.
I hope we've got part 2, 3 and 4.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anne. Thank you so much, Tanya. Absolutely brilliant. Speak again soon.
Thank you.